6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. President Trump has stiffened his resolve against North Korea, speaking of Pyongyang initiating warfare.
I will tell you this, if North Korea does anything in terms of even thinking about attack of anybody that we love or we represent or our allies or us, they can be very, very nervous. I'll tell you what, and they should be very nervous.
Meantime, U.S. Defense Chief Jim Mattis said he's making provisions for some sort of military response to a North Korean provocation, but he said the primary methods being employed right now remain diplomatic. A U.S. Navy destroyer carried out an operation near the Chinese man-made islands in the South China Sea in an effort to challenge China's territorial claims there. The development comes at a time of heightened tensions between the U.S. and North Korea, and the Trump administration seeking China's help in dealing with it all. China, Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam are all involved in a long-standing dispute over rightful ownership of the busy waters of the South China Sea. Results of Kenya's presidential election expected later today. Tuesday's polling pitted incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta against the opposition leader Raila Odinga. Provisional tallies released by the Electoral Commission so far show Kenyatta with a 9-point lead over Odinga. Turkish authorities have arrested warrants now. They put out arrest warrants. 35 journalists are on their list, media professionals as well, suspected of links to the U.S.-based Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, who is accused of masterminding last year's failed coup. 9 people so far arrested in Ankara. This is VOA News. International Organization for Migration says it's searching for human smugglers who it says forced 120 Somalis and Ethiopians into the sea as their vessel approached the coast of Yemen, causing more than 50 teenage migrants to drown. IOM spokesperson Olivia Heaton tells VOA the migrants knew they could die but were helpless to resist.
There was one lead smuggler who was directly instructing the migrants, but he did have other smugglers working on the boat with him who were armed with guns and other weapons. So the migrants had a choice. They would either be harmed more than they'd probably been already on the journey, shot, or jump into the sea. Some were actually physically pushed as well.
The IOM says 29 people died, 22 still missing and presumed drowned. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says he's heartbroken over the drowning, he says, dozens of migrants, those are off the coast of Yemen. Migrants from Syria, Yemen, Haiti, and other stricken places around the world leaving the U.S. in droves trying to immigrate to Canada. This woman immigrated to the U.S. when she was a child from Haiti and is now seeking asylum in Canada. Sorry, we don't have that sound right now. The migrants say that were driven by the perception that President Trump is making the U.S.
They were
a country.
For me, because
first
since
all,
I was crying, she was crying too.
System,
because it's a life changing for me. This is all
GCC
I know.
Banks, Saudi US, banks, Emirati banks,
with,
and
from
and
my
Qatari
young age
to
now.
That has grown to
that's all I know. So I don't know what's waiting for me over there.
A bit of a dollar shortage.
As I was saying, the migrants said they are driven by the perception President Trump is making the U.S. a country to avoid migrants, while Canada, under Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, is welcoming them. Qatar's recent move to grant visa-free entry for nationals of 80 countries aimed at decreasing the impact of its diplomatic row with Saudi Arabia and other regional nations. Brookings Data Center researcher Abdul Ghaffar says the sanctions on Qatar following the rift have brought many negative impacts on the country's economy. Moody's is reporting that Qatar's GDP could grow 2.4% this year, a significant fall from the 13.3% which the country had sustained during 2006 through 2014. Qatari government has taken a series of measures to try to avert that from happening. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Friday, August 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. As Kenyans await official results from Tuesday's presidential elections, preliminary results show that the incumbent president Uhuru Kenyatta has an edge over his opponent Raila Odinga. However, the opposition says that it obtained a copy of leaked official results from IEBC, the Electoral Commission servers, and that the results put the opposition candidate Raila Odinga in the lead.
We demand that the IEBC chairperson announce the presidential election results forthwith and declare the Right Honorable Raila Amolo Odinga and His Excellency Stephen Kalonzo Musyoka as the duly elected president and deputy president of the Republic of Kenya, respectively.
That is Kenya's opposition spokesperson Musalia Mudavadi. Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, IEBC, says it would declare results of the outcome of the general election today, Friday.
The chairman estimated that by midday, all the constituency forms, the forms 34B, the 290 of them, will be in. So far, by now, we're doing 175. And so, well, that is a good estimate that by midday, we will be done.
Andrew Limo is the spokesperson for the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission in Kenya. The IOM says that up to 180 migrants were forced from a boat by smugglers off the coast of Yemen. This comes less than a day after smugglers forced more than 120 Somali and Ethiopian migrants into the sea as they approached the coast of Shabwa in Yemen. Those stories and more are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. As Kenyans await official results from Tuesday's general elections, the opposition says that it obtained a copy of leaked official results from the Electoral Commission servers. In a press conference held by opposition leader Mr. Raila Odinga and his running mate Kalonzo Musyoka, the opposition coalition spokesman Musalia Mudavadi said that their unofficial results put Mr. Odinga ahead of the incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta.
We have now received further information from confidential IEBC sources furnishing us with the actual presidential election results contained in their database. We demand that the IEBC chairperson announce the presidential election results forthwith and declare the Right Honorable Raila Amolo Odinga and His Excellency Stephen Kalonzo Musyoka as the duly elected president and deputy president of the Republic of Kenya, respectively.
Mr. Mudavadi says that they have written to the IEBC to share their concerns on issues affecting the presidential tally.
And we have formally delivered a letter expressing our disappointment, but at the same time pointing out certain serious irregularities and anomalies that we want them to look into immediately, and we shall be giving you a copy of that letter that we have delivered to the IEBC. It is stamped, showing that they have acknowledged receipt of it, and we have made some very specific demands in that letter, which will be attached to the statement that I'm going to read to you. And this is a statement which is a briefing on the 2017 presidential election, and I'm speaking on behalf of NASA.
Meanwhile, despite the opposition's claim of massive fraud in the elections, foreign observers expressed their confidence in Kenya's electoral process. Addressing reporters, former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said that he was confident in the integrity of the Kenyan elections and praised the country's election commission for its transparency and diligence.
It is our firm conclusion that the IEBC has put in place and is thus far following a detailed process of paper ballot counting and security, which, if followed through to the final steps, can give each Kenyan confidence that their vote was properly recorded and that, therefore, this election can appropriately certify the outcome.
Secretary Kerry called on candidates who might dispute the results of the elections to work within the judicial process to address them.
I am convinced that goodwill and good faith and a proper analysis of this election and the rules which have guided it, that Kenya can move forward and embrace progress, significant progress in its democracy. We call on all the candidates, whether they are victors or losers in this race, to work within the rule of law and the legitimate dispute process in order to challenge any aspect of this election where they have evidence that somehow that dispute made a material difference on the outcome of the election. We affirm with conviction that the judicial process, the judicial system of Kenya, and the election laws themselves make full and adequate provision for accountability in this election. The streets do not.
Meanwhile, the U.S. government has called for patience as the Electoral Commission tallies the poll results. A statement from the U.S. State Department says that the Electoral Commission should be given time to determine the winner of the Tuesday poll. It also encouraged the IEBC to continue communicating openly with the Kenyan public. Meanwhile, Kenya's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, IEBC, says that it will declare results of the outcome of the general election today on Friday. Andrew Limo, spokesperson for the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, tells VOA's Peter Cloti that Kenyans should remain peaceful as the electoral body readies to announce the outcome of the general election.
The chairman estimated that by midday, all the constituency forms, the forms 34B, the 290 of them, will be in. So far, by now, we're doing 175. And so, well, that is a good estimate that by midday, we will be done.
Andrew, so far, how has the process gone in terms of tabulating the results, collating it, and then culminating in today releasing the outcome of the results?
You see, Peter, what happened is when some doubts were cast on the electronic results, the narrative that was then going on was that why don't we have a backup of, they must be supported by hard copy forms. And I think this is logical and it makes sense because any data that is being transmitted must have the basics. Where did it come from? And this is exactly what we have done. We have asked for the scanned copies of the results forms that were actually signed by political party agents. And this is what we have added coming. So we have two sets. We have a polling station's form set 4A, and those would be 40,883. So far, we have uploaded on our website 29,000. And it's going on. We continue to do that. And for the constituency, because this the form 34As that come from polling stations, aggregate of the summary of that comes under form 34B, which is the summary of the polling station results. So that's what I'm saying. We have now 175 of that. And once we conclude, that is translated in a summary form called form 34C. And that is the one that is used to declare the presidential winner.
The opposition leader, leader of NASA, the main opposition coalition, says that it appears that the electoral system the IEBC is using has been hacked. So he says results that are being churned out are fake and called for an investigation to find out what went wrong. Is the IEBC looking into his concern?
Yeah, first of all, I think we have said that our systems are intact. We have not had any reported cases of vulnerabilities. But even so, we are saying the most important issue there was that the electronic results were not going to be final anyway. And this was agreed, and this is the policy, this is the law, and we were going to declare winners based on the hard copy results. And so, even as those allegations are investigated and all that, the bottom line is we have the copies that were the basis of those electronic results. And that's it's fundamental, because then that is the genesis of those results. And so I don't know whether anybody would have any problem with forms that were signed at the polling station by the agents. And we gave them copies as well. We have self-carbonating forms, up to 15 copies. Would anyone have a problem with those? And they were now uploading on the website. And let anyone tell us that these forms are different from the copies. They do have them themselves. And I think for us, so it renders the issue of whether hacking or not less critical, much as any allegation of that should be looked into.
No,
but for the purpose of the work at hand, I mean, that's neither here nor there.
Andrew, looking at the mood in the country, what is the IEBC's message to Kenyans who are waiting particularly for the outcome of the presidential election, since it was anticipated that it will be the most competitive?
I think the commission is we're really asking for patience and understanding, realizing that, and we're happy that everybody seems to be happy that the actual process of voting went on very well. And could be delays in having the results finally. But this would be understandable. This was an election that we had a high turnout, and so it takes time to count. And for us, then credibility, you must be very sure of what you're transmitting, what you are recording, that they must be credible. There must be true results that reflect the actual voting.
Andrew Limo is the spokesperson for the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission in Kenya. He spoke with VOA's Peter Cloti from Kenya's capital, Nairobi. The International Organization for Migration says that up to 180 migrants were forced from a boat by smugglers off the coast of Yemen. This comes less than a day after smugglers forced more than 120 Somali and Ethiopian migrants into the sea as they approach the coast of Shabwa. Olivia Hedon is the Information Officer for Emergencies with the UN Migration Agency, IOM.
Yesterday and today, we've had two tragic and similar incidences where over 100 migrants were forced from a boat by smugglers. Yesterday, it was approximately 120 people. Today, it was approximately 160. Of the people yesterday, up to 50 died. Our staff found close to 30 bodies on the beach. And then the remainder of the 50 are people who are still missing or unaccounted for. Today was a similar situation where our staff, who regularly patrol these beaches to try and help vulnerable migrants who are trying to transit on this route, they came across six bodies on the beach. Also, they met the survivors who told them that originally 50 people were missing. Now we know that number is closer to 13. So today, the presumed dead is approximately 19.
The International Organization for Migration says that it estimates so far this year that around 55,000 migrants left the Horn of Africa to come to Yemen on their way to Gulf countries. Olivia Hedon says most of those migrants are under the age of 18.
It's shocking in general, but also the average age of these Somali and Ethiopian migrants was approximately 16. They're children. And the tragedy today, it was all Ethiopians. The survivors would be, 141. The 57 that we're providing assistance to are with IOM staff. Close by to where the incident happened. The remaining who had left the beach before we arrived, we can't account for their whereabouts, but they're somewhere in Yemen.
Olivia Hedon is the Information Officer for Emergencies with the UN Migration Agency, IOM. In South Africa, Stefan Magowan, a South African man who was kidnapped by Al-Qaeda in Mali 6 years ago, made his first public appearance after his release last week. The South African government says that no money was paid for his release, even though Al-Qaeda had initially demanded millions in ransom. From Johannesburg, South Africa, reporter Nadia Sami files this report.
South African citizen Stephen McGowan set out on a six-month tour of Africa on his motorbike in 2011. It was to be his last adventure before settling down in Johannesburg to start a family with his wife Catherine and work with his father in the family business. But he found himself at a hotel in Timbuktu in Mali while a coup was taking place. McGowan and two other travelers were kidnapped by Al-Qaeda. It was the start of a six-year ordeal.
The difficult part of the Sahara was really that you don't have any information. And as much as you ask, nobody is able to tell you anything. And I'm not sure if they just do not tell you anything or if they're not allowed to tell you. So this was difficult. And then again, not having many books in English and not knowing Arabic.
Back home in South Africa, his parents and wife worked tirelessly trying to secure his release. They approached the government and independent negotiators, but the attempts were in vain. Al-Qaeda initially demanded 10 million euro for his release, money the McGowan family simply did not have. In the meantime, Stephen was housed in a hut in the Sahara Desert.
I did my best to see the best in the bad situation in the difficult time. So I suppose you try and find routine, doing a bit of exercise. I was trying to make conversation with the Mujahideen to get along with the Mujahideen. I didn't want to come out an angry person and become an even greater burden for my family. I mean, this past period, I think has been incredibly difficult for my family. And the last thing I wanted to do was to come out and be a bigger burden for my family.
Stephen's mother, Beverly, made impassioned pleas on national television, begging for her son's release. She said all she wanted was to hug him again. Beverly's health, already in poor condition, deteriorated rapidly as she pined for her son. The family never gave up hope, even as the weeks turned into months and the months into years. Eventually, they turned to aid organization Gift of the Givers, which has played a key role in the release of hostages in the past. Communication with the kidnappers was established, and slowly, Stephen McGowan's release was negotiated. The family's tenacity paid off. On the 29th of July 2017, Stephen McGowan was freed and returned to South Africa. Sadly, his mother passed away just 3 months before his release. Meanwhile, the South African government, aid group Gift of the Givers, and the family say they did not pay a ransom to secure his release. Stephen is still trying to make sense of the last 6 years of his life. It's taken a toll on his physical and mental health, and he says he has a lot of catching up to do with his family. He says he's experienced information overload since returning home on Sunday. But he's taking one day at a time as he reintegrates into a very different South Africa to the one he left 6 years ago.
Thank you, Nadia Sami. That was Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. And a draft bill for Gambia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, known as the TRC, has been drafted. This week, authorities are traveling the country speaking to civil society organizations and other residents who may have been victims during the former President Yahya Jammeh's regime. Amnesty International researcher Sabrina Matani talks to Ricky Shryok about the TRC's mission, timeline, and challenges.
After this period of consultation, they'll then come up with what is the final plan for this TRC.
Is there any kind of timeline set for the TRC now that they're starting the, I guess you could call it, research and interviewing phase?
Yeah, I think the aim is that it should start by the end of the year. And that does seem a bit optimistic, given that even once the act is finalized, they still need to hire lots of people and set up institutions. But it's encouraging to see that this, you know, is still underway. Some people thought, you know, this was not going to happen for a really long time. And I think this start is a really good start. And the fact that they're trying to get views from people across the country is really important.
Were more bodies found in Gambia by officials who are believed to have been victims of the Jammeh regime. I believe it was migrants who had snuck out of Gambia years and years ago.
I don't think they found bodies in Gambia, but I think that there's, more people, not even more stories coming to light, because these have already been documented, but I think it's sort of the media going over them again and, you know, trying to get more information about them. And this was a case of, yes, some migrants from, like, I think it was 2000 who are said to have been killed, and it was alleged that they were buried in a well in Gambia, but there's no concrete information that actually happened. But I think this is what is important about the TRC, is that, you know, people can come forward and hopefully there'll be information that was not available before, and people will be able to answer these questions about what did happen in Gambia during that period.
And from a human rights perspective, how important is this process so that the country moves forward, so that the country improves the human rights situation?
The TRC is a really fundamental step forward in Gambia being able to address the past and to look at issues of accountability. And, you know, Gambia cannot really build a new Gambia based on human rights unless it does address these past issues. But I think it's important to note that the TRC should be just one mechanism. It's one part of a big puzzle. And what's really key is that as the TRC is being planned and drafted, Amnesty International are very adamant that there should not be amnesties for any serious crimes under international law.
That was Sabrina Matan, West Africa researcher at Amnesty International. She was speaking to Ricky Shryock from Dakar. And it's time for Daybreak Sports. Let's turn to our sports editor, Samson O'Malley.
Good morning to you, Jackson. We begin with the 2017 IWAF World Championships in London, where the London Stadium was shocked to see South Africa's Wade van Niekerk's bid for the 200 meters and 400 meters double, and as Turkey's Ramil Guliyev claimed a shock 200 meters win. South Africa's Wayne van Niekerk was seeking to emulate Michael Johnson's feat from 1995, but finished second. Staying with the IWAF World Championships in London, Olympic bronze medalist Margaret Nyerere carries Kenya's hope of a medal in the women's 800 meters after sailing through to the semi-final of the top lap race, winning her heat in the time of 2 minutes and 75 seconds ahead of Britain's Lindsay Sharp. Kenya's other representative, Emily Cherotich, could only come through sixth in her heat in a time of 2 minutes 2.70 seconds. Uganda's Halima Nakai finished third to earn an automatic qualification slot. In the 5,000 meters, Kenya's Henley Obiri remained on course to win her first major title after qualifying fastest from the heats at the World Championship on Thursday. The 27-year-old won bronze medal in 2013 and came back from a year off to claim silver at the Rio 2016 Olympics. Helen Obiri, the world leader this year, qualified for Sunday's final in a time of 14 minutes 56.70 seconds. In tennis news, the 2017 semester International Table Tennis Federation Challenge Nigerian Open, which kicked off on Wednesday, August 9th, will end this Sunday, August the 13th. A total of 92 males and 52 females are taking part in the event. And for the number one male seeded player, Arna Quadri, he has his eyes set for the ultimate prize. Munir Bassar, tournament director, said the standard of the competition is high and will continue to attract players from all over the world. In other news, Nigerian contingent to the African All-Star Gymnastics Tournament in Pretoria in South Africa have been forced to cut short their participation at the tournament after running out of funds. Tony Asuko, who is the coach of the team, told reporters in Abuja that they decided to return home from South Africa on Tuesday because of inadequate funds. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Friday, the 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.